So he says it's Brachos. This is from Brachos Nun. It's Nun Zayin in the Rashba. He says, "Hayar Reb Meir Omer Minayin Shafilu Ubrin Shebimoi Imon Omru Shira." So it's talking about by Yitzias Mitzrayim. So he says, "How do you know that even the fetuses said the Shira?" Right? Shenemar v'makolos baruchu Elokim Hashem mimekor Yisrael. Right. So it's just one of those Maimon Chazal that just sounds, you know, impossible on its literal interpretation, and just it's interesting to see how he approaches it. So he gives a rational interpretation to this somewhat impossible sounding Chazal. He says, "Biadua shama ubros ma pilos pirabos alehen hapachadam vahamikrim hamavhilin." So he says, well, we all know, it's a known fact that pregnant women lose their miscarry when they are frightened, when something frightening occurs to them. And when the Bnei Yisrael stood at Yam Suf and the Mitzrim were chasing after them to kill them, they were extremely afraid. And then the Yam was split for them, and they had to go between the walls. So he says, at that moment, just based on the natural law, they should have had miscarriages. Anyone who was pregnant at that time should have miscarried because of the fear. Unless there was a nais to strengthen the lev ha-me'ubros shebohen. In other words, he says there had to be some kind of a nace to fortify the natural condition to prevent the miscarriages, and to therefore save those babies, that not one of them was miscarried. Even though there were thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people, so there certainly were women there who were in the condition that such a phenomenon would have caused them extreme fear and miscarriage, but there was a nace that wouldn't happen, and that is what it means by the shira of the ubrin, meaning to say not that they actually sang, not that they actually gave a shira at that time, but it was ru'uyin lomar shira. It means to say that the Chazal, the Medrash, is really trying to teach you the extent of the nais of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And it's expressing the fact that even though they could have been saved, right? Yam Suf split and it saved them. And that would have been... to quote a famous phrase, Dayenu, right? That would have been enough, right? But the Medrash of saying that the Ubrin gave Shira is expressing the idea that the Nais didn't just happen in a way that that satisfied the necessity of escaping, but it also was done in a way that maintained Klal Yisrael whole, and that required a separate nace of fortifying and strengthening the condition of the pregnant women at that time. But it's expressed in the sense that the Ubrin gave Shira, meaning to say that obviously they couldn't have given Shira, but it means to say that they were the recipients of a special nace. So to express the fact that they were the recipients of a special nais, it expresses it in the sense of what is roi. It's roi for somebody who receives a hashgacha like that to give a shevach. It's an interesting idea. You see Chazal trying to highlight bring out a certain element of the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim that you don't think about. You know, you don't think, oh, what about the pregnant women? What happened to them? Did they were they subject to the natural law of you know, fright and miscarriage? And Chazal are teaching us from this pasuk, Mimekor Yisrael, right? He says that implies the you know, the womb. And he tries to explain what does it mean, Yisrael alone, right? So he says maybe the Erev Rav didn't have this nes. Maybe it was Dafka for Yisrael. Or the Iker nes was because of Mikar Yisrael, and the Erev Rav was associated to that.
Does he hold that Chazal actually derived the fact of this miracle from this pasuk, or does he hold that there was a like a Masorah? Either way is difficult. I mean
is it really a drasha? I mean, are they deriving this idea from?
Well,
here?
First of all, just how do they know that this nes happened? Like, you know,
right?
I mean, either way you say it, it's difficult. Like, if you say that they're getting it from the pasuk, that's difficult. It's a difficult thing because it seems like it's just a drasha,
right?
And then it's just is there any indication anywhere in actual pesukim, you know, that like what do they do? Like, they just went around and figured out that there are no women who had miscarriages.
Yeah.
And,
you
know.
Before you answer, just want to interject two other ideas. One of them is that sometimes you get so caught up in an event, you don't have time to be afraid. That's a story. Psychologists go through this idea that people are in a rushed event. And believe it or not, you have an historical context. It happened during the Holocaust when people were being rounded up. These women did not miscarry.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. I mean, just like a
shock. And you can't say that that was any less fearful. Believe me, they ended up being rounded up. You know, it was very well done at the beginning. I think it was Schindler's List where they show the roundup. And you can't even, there's a cacophony of noise.
Right.
And my wife, when we were watching at the time, said, so you can't understand what's going on. I said, that's the point.
Mm-hmm.
This was happening so fast, so bizarre an event,
mm-hmm.
they didn't have a chance to even think about
mm-hmm.
what was going on.
Interesting.
And I think fear requires conscious thought, like, what are we going through? And sometimes
right.
you need reaction time to
right.
do that.
Right. So, I mean, but over here, they were, over here, I guess it was more, they knew exactly, you know.
Yeah,
I understand. I'm just throwing these ideas out. No, that's an interesting phenomenon. It's almost like a state of shock. You don't really.
Yeah, you're in a state of shock. You don't have time to really, to be afraid.
Right. Right, but the pasuk says they were definitely afraid. So that's why he's saying it did require some sort of an ace. Now, you're right. In your situation, you're right. But he's saying in this situation, it did require some kind of an ace. But Matt's question is this just a conjecture and he's hanging it on a pasuk? Or is there some...
like a masorah about this? Or?
Yeah. Because he does seem to be, the Rashba at least, seems to be very concerned with matching it up literally with Mikor Yisrael.
Right.
Right. And he's giving possibilities of how it either... Either it didn't apply to the heir of Rav, or the Iker Nes was Mekor Yisrael. And that's why the Shira says Mekor Yisrael. It's a good question. Is he learning this pasuk to mean like a literal, referring to that particular Nes? Does seem like he's learning the pasuk is referring to that kind of a Nes.
Mm-hmm. Is the context even about Yetzias Mitzrayim?
As it does seem that the Chazal hold this parak, and Ibn Ezra tries to explain in the beginning, is he says it's a mizbor nichbad me'od, and it is recounting the flows. Exactly the events that it's referring to is not doesn't seem to be completely clear, but it does seem according to the Rashba the Gemara is really darshening what is this referring to. B'makelos baruchu Elokim. Hashem mi Mekor Yisrael. So it's he says Hamivorchim Mitzuz Dov is a pretty plain track, guy. Hayu Elu Haboim mi Mekor Yisrael. Mi Zera Yisrael. Kina Hazera b'mei HaMekor. So the Makor is referring to the Rashi's Mimoi Iman. This is the Aragam apparently. But so he's saying if you're going to learn, it's talking about the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So and Makor means so it's a marshal. The Baruch Hu Hashem means giving thanks to Hashem. That's what they mean. They're interpreting that. That's what they're interpreting to be Shira. And Mekor Yisrael is, he's saying, it means to say that it was Roy for Mekor Yisrael to give Shira. It was Roy for the Ubra, for the Ubrin, the Moy Imon, to give Shira. But Noah's, that's the method of drush, though. Now, however you're going to, the method of drush is that they're saying the pasuk is giving a, is describing a, in by way of poetic way of describing the niflos of the nisim of the event of the two Sfraim, and they have a right to darshan that, and. But you have to fit it in. You still have to fit it in with the idea you come out with has to be in line with the text of the pasuk. So if it's saying Mekor Yisrael, and you're deriving from this an idea that there was a special shevach that was roy to be said on the Ubrin, so then you have to explain why it's dafka Yisrael.
I guess the thing that's bothering
still bothered by something.
But, yeah, the thing that's bothering, I don't know if this should bother me.
In other words, in these types of things, you're learning, there's nothing that's, it's like the Rambam says by mitzvahs, you know? It says if you find a good idea in a mitzvah, you should attribute it to it.
Right.
You have like chukim.
Yeah.
So, you know, as he's saying, if you think through the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and there's a pasuk over here that you see, and you can attribute a good idea to the events of Yetzias Mitzrayim to the meaning of this pasuk. There's nothing wrong with doing that. That's a method of drush, and it does make sense if you think it through. And it really is a benefit to really trying to think through in a real sense the events of Mitzrayim, as opposed to just. Mm-hmm. A grand, big story. You got to think through the lives of those people. What were they really going through? How would they have reacted? What would have really occurred? So he's saying when you think it through that way and you recognize these details that you might have, you know, you gloss over when you just think about, you don't think about them in like a personal way. You just think about it like historically. Okay, they were slaves, they got out, and that's how we're here. But, you know, when you, the Shevach Hashem is even on the, is not just, in the long term, not just in the fact that they were freed and set up the future generations, but to them themselves, there was a certain chesed and a certain nes, and for their personal experience, they were nisim.
Yeah, but you know, interesting. Rethinking what I said before,
yeah.
Maybe the people going through Holocaust, for them, it was an ace too. We just haven't reflected on it that way.
Right.
Just the word, you know, when I think about it, how do I know that's not nice? I mean, that's also an amazing thing. I mean, people are also going through tremendously, crazy times, stressful.
True.
Maybe, you know,
that's true. But the nace over here was that they survived. I mean,
yeah, I hear
you. Right. But, yeah. Okay. So, just as an approach, though, I just think it's an important piece. I mean, to see how he. You know, I mean, just to, it gives you a certain way to think about things. You know, when you see Chazal say that literally the fetuses were giving a shira, you have to understand what that means. You have to learn how to interpret these things a little bit better. Sometimes it talks like the Navi also. Sometimes it talks about the Roy in as if it were actually happening. Sometimes it's the style of Marshall to speak about that which. Should happen as if it actually happens, even if it's literally impossible for it to actually happen. Like we say all the time, Shamayim Mesapim Kvod Kel. Doesn't mean the heavens are really saying things about Kvod Hashem, but it means it's roy to learn from them certain things, certain ideas. So it's as if we could say that. Mm-hmm. So here too, he's saying by giving this analogy, and there's no doubt they say it like this because it's like he was saying later on, it has a certain appeal, it has a certain, you know, to people maybe, they say it during the drushes, you know, wake up guys a little bit, and it certainly is memorable. It certainly is memorable. You might overlook this idea, you might pass it up. And that was the meaning of the Nes, it seems, is a certain Midas HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that you could just say, you know, there was a need to get these people out of Mitzrayim in order to set up the future generations, and the only Shinoi Teva would be those things that are necessary to get them out. So they're all standing there by the Yam. The Yam has to split. But to say now, well, if this situation is stressful and therefore some of them will lose their babies, okay, so be it. I mean, that's just the way it is. You know, I mean, that's not necessary for the accomplishment of the goal of Yetzias Mitzrayim. That's now a more personal thing for these individuals who are the ones who are experiencing this. So there's a certain limud of a Chesed Hashem in the way things are done. That it's not just done in an expedient way, but it's also done in the way that takes into account the particular needs of the people. Okay. All right. Let's take. Let's jump. Now let's go ahead to Tainus. So this is the first one in Tainus. It's the Gemara's Hey Yom and Alf. Omalei Rav Nachman the Rav Yitzchak, my dichsiv bekirvach kadosh v'lo avo be'ir. So what does that mean? There's holiness in the within you, bekirvach kadosh within you is kadosh. I will not enter the city. That's what God says. Bishmishum de bekirvach kadosh v'lo avo be'ir. What kind of sense does that make? That the pasuk says that Hashem says because there's Kedusha within you, I won't enter the city. Because that sounds the opposite. Omar lay, so Rabbi Yitzchak said, Hochi Omar, Rabbi Yochanan. This is what Rabbi Yochanan taught. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu nichnas liYerushalayim shel mala ad shetivne Yerushalayim shel mata. That... So I think Rashi explains in the Gemara. It's like ad bekir b'char kadosh, and unless there's kedusha in Yerushalayim shalmata, then lo ovo be'ir, I will not enter Yerushalayim shalmala. Okay. So he asks the sensible question: Umi ikir Yerushalayim lamala? Is there really Yerushalayim up there? He said, yeah, because it says Yerushalayim habenuya. Ki'ir she chubro lo yachtav. Okay. Yeah. Yerushalayim abnei ki'ir she chubro lo yachtav. So Rashi says in the drasha means it has like a friend like it. It has like someone like it. She chubro yachtav. I mean, the plain shot is. Like the Mitzvah's David has. Zoshlam Asher he benuya b'chol mine pe'er. All sorts of glory. Kiir Asher chubro lo yachtav kol habonim. It's like a city that all the builders join together to make. Like lechalala b'chol mine pe'er v'yofi. Like if all the expert artisans and craftsmen would join together to make one city. That's like Yerushalayim. But in the Drasha, it's Ki'ir, I think Rashi says in the Gemara, Shechubra lo yachtav, that has like a sister city to it. So that's Yerushalayim Shalmala. Okay, so what does this mean? So it says, V'yesh bazeh sod. There's a secret here. V'da, ki Yerushalayim Shalmata, Vitzion ubeis hamikdash kulam tziurim heim leinyonim sichliim dakim ma'od. This is a recurring theme in the Rashba, that there are certain forms and designs in the physical structure of the mikdash and Yerushalayim. That are dakim ma'od le'inyonim sichliim. They have some metaphysical reality to them. Hem le'inyonim sichliim dakim od.
Meaning like they reflect?
They reflect certain deeper truths. It's like he said by Gan Eden. He had that same idea by Gan Eden. In Gan Eden, it wasn't just Stam Gan, but there was corresponded some concepts. If you could decipher the design, it reflects some deeper metaphysical truth. He says, Gam kol Eretz Yisrael. The Alkein Nikras, this is what we're talking about, right? Ha'oretz Eretz Hachayim V'nachlas Hashem. The Alkein Tluyos Ba'oretz Kama Mitzvos HaTorah. The Alze Omru Kol Ador B'chutzul Oretz K'mi She'ein Lo Eloka. And that's true about all of Eretz Yisrael, he says. And that's why it's a land that has many mitzvos associated with it. And that's what Chazal mean when they say anyone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael is as if he lives without a God.
Why?
V'klei HaMikdash, one second, tziyurim l'inyonim ruchniyim. The designs of the klei HaMikdash were not just aesthetically pleasing, but they have some metaphysical attributes. V'hu omro Urei vasei betavnisa mashir atamare bohar. Yeah, so what does it have to do with this sod over here? What is he saying over here? And what does it have to do with Yerushalayim Shalmala and to say that until the Jews go into the go into Yerushalayim Shalmata, then Einakash Baruch Nichnas to Yerushalayim Shalmala. What does this all mean? What's the sod? I mean, he's saying it's a sod, but he's trying to hint a little bit. Yerushalayim Shalmata and Tzion and the Beis HaMikdash are all Tziurim Heim L'Inyonim Sichliim Dakim Od. Very fine. They're all designs of very fine concepts. Yeah. Well, God going into the Yerushalayim Shalmala implies a completion, right? Like it's a complete. Now the building, so to speak, is complete and functioning fully. But and it's sort of like, I mean, it's an interesting marshal. It's an interesting marshal because, like Ken is saying, I think the lower one is a reflection of the higher one. No, in other words, what comes first, really? What really comes
the
first?
The concept. The higher one comes first.
The concept comes first, right? Because he's saying the lower one is it reflects certain true ideas, and via our interaction with the material of Eretz Yisrael and the building and the Har HaBayis, we can use those physical things as ways of elevating ourselves to see true ideas that obviously pre-exist them, because true ideas are eternal.
I mean, logically, the upper ones come first, but educationally, like, we're supposed to use the lower ones to gain knowledge of these things that they
correct.
Represent.
Because man can't go to ideas directly. Right? I mean, we need to learn. We need to kav l'kav. Right? What does that mean? It means to say, what does it say about Shlomo Melech? What was Shlomo Melech? He was someone who took small strings and put them together to get down into the deep, deep well. You know, man, that's the nature of learning. The nature of learning is you have to start with what you know and extend it to new territory. But you can't start with something that you can't just jump to an idea if it has no foundation in your mind, no category in your mind exists for its to relate to it. So in that sense, he's saying there are true deep ideas. But in a certain sense, it's lo basha Miami. You got to get to them. We can't just perceive. We're not ready for such a. We don't have the ability to connect to that directly. We have to learn it. We have to drag ourselves out of what we're familiar with. I mean, we're so steeped in the basis of physical existence, mm-hmm. We have to go through that to pull ourselves to a higher level of knowledge. So he's saying that's Eretz Yisrael and the Beis HaMikdash. They really serve that function. That we, it's like a way that just that through our familiar we can extract and see deeper ideas. So Eretz Yisrael has certain associations to us and certain models and certain events there that impact the person, and living there gives you a certain identification. It helps to, you know, even using our common way of thinking about things and relating to things, it helps to bring us to ideas. So he means to say, and that's what he means to say. He says, when you say someone who lives outside of Eretz Yisrael, it's like he has no God. Obviously, I mean, the Rashba lived out of Eretz Yisrael. I mean, that doesn't mean that you can't believe in Hashem if you live out. But he means to say the nature of the living itself, just from the living. You know what I'm saying? There's a certain idea in just being a resident of the area of Eretz Yisrael has a certain impact on a person. So
it's almost as though it helps you transcend certain physical boundaries that you might normally have.
That's right.
And it
directs your thoughts in different in the right ways. Yeah.
We had Moshe Rabbeinu, you know, the when he asked to understand the yellow attorney Adam Atzmi V'Chayim, that you can't. It doesn't mean I have a face. It means you can't understand my essence.
Right. Exactly.
But you know, you have the whole Shiloh with Moshe Rabbeinu never got to Eretz Yisrael, but I actually was saying somebody, in essence, he did, because there's only two places where you're ever told you have to take off your shoes.
Right.
One of them was the Kaddish Yugashim.
Right.
And the other one was when Moshe approached the set. He spiritually got to where Eretz Yisrael would get him. So it's not as though he needed that anymore to elevate himself.
Right. We needed that.
We needed it. That's correct. He didn't.
But, so that's what he means to say. He's saying, just from the Dira, Kol Hador. So the Dira alone is different if you're living in Eretz Yisrael, living outside of Eretz Yisrael. But of course, learning and Torah mitzvahs is not just living. So a person who's involved in thinking and working on himself and doing extra, of course he can be. You can't say he doesn't have a God because he's not living in Eretz Yisrael. But in a certain in the same sense, he's saying the whole idea of the Beis HaMikdash and the Kalim of the Beis HaMikdash also reflect ideas that when a person goes there, it brings him closer to certain, has an impact on him, and it helps to direct his thoughts to the metaphysics, to the realities of Hashem. So in that sense, it's interesting. In that sense, like we were saying before, the ideas themselves really are there first. And for us, we have certain ways of accessing them that we have to go through the, you know, Eretz Yisrael and then Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash. But what is the, so that I understand. It's saying the exists, Yerushalayim Shalmala exists. That sort of gives an existence to you know, the physical now that is able to give us an access to it. But what's the end? That until we move in to Yerushalayim and the Beis HaMikdash, Hashem will not move into Yerushalayim Shalmala. That's running the other way now, right? That sounds like it's going the other way now. What we do in the Mata is going to change what happens in Lamala. Up to now, we're saying, okay, Lamala is the true existence. Certain things here reflect truth, you know, and can bring us to true ideas. But what does it mean then? And then when we move in, that what does it mean when we move in? Following the Mashal, we see when we move in means to say when we have fully actualized the knowledge that we can gain from the physical, from the mitzvos tluyos baretz and the ideas of the avos and the ideas of the Hara Moria and avoda and the Beis Hamikdash, then what? We normally think of the idea that there's a Shechina Shore in the Yerushalayim Shalmata, like you were saying. I mean, what is the idea of the what is the idea that God will be nichnas into the Yerushalayim Shalmala? So in terms of this marshal, maybe it's like this. So he's saying that it's describing the way that you gain true knowledge of God. Right. Now, firstly, you have to go through the ideas of causality in this world, and you know you have to go through the certain amount of understanding of you start out, like we were saying before, through the ideas of this world. They're a bridge to the ideas of metaphysical ideas of Mala. So just like Yerushalayim Shalmata expresses a certain idea that we connect, our limud begins through our, you know, physical interactions and our senses and deductions we make from that and limud from history and all types of things like that. But there are also developments in your metaphysical thinking. Mm-hmm. And the Yerushalayim Shalmala also represents a certain idea of refining your metaphysical thinking, philosophy. You know, there is an approach to reasoning in that system too. Like Rambam discusses a lot in the Mor Nevuchim. You know, the method of metaphysical contemplation, and it's not the same. I mean, as other sciences, and that's why Rambam has a whole series of chapters that you shouldn't just. Can't start learning that type of thing until you're, more advanced. Like in the study of Torah, there's the Davar Katan and Davar Gadol. So we know there's a certain, you have to have a certain ability in more concrete thinking first. Then you develop your ability. You know, learn through sugyas and gemaras, and you learn about arguments and proofs and disproofs that relate to things that are more concrete. And then you can start dealing in areas that are much more abstract. But what it means to say is, when you fully moved into the Yerushalayim Shalmata, it means to say you fully have now realized the full metaphysical concepts that Yerushalayim Shalmata refers to. Only then can you really have a full appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what it means. And then Hashem moves into Yerushalayim Shalmala. It means to say, Now you fully have the right framework to view the reality of God. So it's representing, it's saying that there are two things. There's Yerushalayim Shalmata represents the physical that we have to break free from, and there are certain tools that we can use, like Eretz Yisrael, Yerushalayim, to help us go from our physical existence, which we're born into, and we have to sort of escape from, to the ideas of Yerushalayim Shalmala. I mean, say to view things as they really are, in the more physical, in the metaphysical reality. But there's no correspondence to God per se. Mm-hmm. You understand? There's no correspondence in the physical world to God. There's a certain correspondence in the physical world that will help us to think abstractly and to think in terms of reality of metaphysics. But all of that will only help us to appreciate what is beyond everything. And that's the truth of God. Mm-hmm. There can be a correspondence to a Yerushalayim Shalmata as a Yerushalayim Shalmala. I mean to say there's a certain correspondence to the way we view this world, and we should also think, there's a certain thinking that goes into the physical, there's a certain reality we have to break away from and view things in a Yerushalayim Shalmala framework. But all of that is only preparing and setting the groundwork for the possibility of now seeing what is the true essence of that whole metaphysical reality, which is God. But until you really fully exhaust the methods of Yerushalayim Shel Mata, which brings the Yerushalayim Shel Mala, you can't really you can't see God like you can see a Yerushalayim Shel Mala. You can only prepare your you can only give yourselves a certain ability to think in a certain way, and then the idea of Kadosh Baruch Hu presents itself. You know, I mean, it's a marshal for the Dera episode.
So when Rabbi,
man, a good question. What does he mean, Mi Ikar Yerushalayim Lamala? And he said, yes. It's a good question. I mean, it's a very, very good question. Let's maybe we can think about it for the next time, because I'll give you something to work on for the next time. In other words, we don't go into Yerushalayim Shel Mala. We go in, that's physically, we enter Yerushalayim Shel Mata. But that gives us a knowledge of Yerushalayim Shel Mala. We relate to Yerushalayim Shel Mata. That means we relate initially to all knowledge via our senses and our physical interactions.
Mm-hmm.
But that gives us a knowledge of Yerushalayim Shel Mala. That is how we engage Yerushalayim Shel Mala. And then once we have fully engaged Yerushalayim Shel Mala, means that once we have perfected our knowledge of the metaphysical realities, then the idea of God becomes clear to us. Then God moves in.
Then God can be found in Yerushalayim.
Then God can be found in Yerushalayim Shel Mala.
It's like a metaphysical version of the tree in the forest. No one is around to hear it make a noise. It's kind of like that, right?
Okay, I'll give you some. Okay, there's a sode in what Ken is saying, right? Maybe. Yeah. That's a good point. Well, but just getting back to what Matt's question was. What was his question? Is there Yerushalayim Lamala? And his answer from the pasuk. So Matt is saying maybe he was asking if Yerushalayim itself, the physical Yerushalayim, really has some representative concepts to all of its attributes. Now there is, the Ramban speaks a lot about it. And in the Chumash, he says that the whole Beis HaMikdash,
mm-hmm,
is like a model of the cosmos. He has like some idea. Mm-hmm. There are deep metaphysical ideas when you look into the way the Beis HaMikdash is constructed and the elements that are there. And they reflect into ideas about creation in general.
Are we talking about Bayis Rishon, Bayis Sheni, or both?
Right, in terms of, he seems to be going further. He seems to be saying the actual details of their construction, because that's what he wants to say, that the Tavnis Asher Ata Mara Bahar, he's trying to link that in, that what does it mean when it said you'll make them in the shape that I showed you in the mountain? He's trying to allude to deeper ideas.
Right.
That their shape will reflect ideas that I taught you in Har Sinai.
Right, which is why they hold that all of the craftsmen.
Right, absolutely. It's good. Right. That's why Bezalel says he wasn't just a craftsman, he had to be a tremendous chacham too. Because it was not just artistry. But
the guy who they brought...
Even him, it's a question of details. Like, how detailed? Like, the Rambam seems to say in the Mohar, certain details you can't ask questions about.
Mm-hmm.
But still, there is a lot of detail. It doesn't seem to be necessary. Like, the little crowns, the Zohar is going around each one, and its construction. You're right. If you say three Amos versus two Amos versus, different things, the Rambam might say, well, it had to be something, and whatever would have been, you would have asked.
Because they're doing it in Daf.
All right, very interesting. Just to clarify the idea of Mishadar V'chuslarts, Kilu Ein Lo Aloka, is saying that means to say that there's a certain reality to that you get from the place that you live, just from that. So if a person lives in Eretz Yisrael, so then just from his walking around, like Gemara says, whoever takes four steps in Eretz Yisrael is avonos or moflin. Now there's a certain effect on your philosophy and on your ideas and on your attitude in general that you get influenced by the place that you're in. So if you're in Eretz Yisrael, he's saying there's a certain influence like that just from The just from the geography, even. I mean, just from relating to the place that you're not going to have outside of Eretz Yisrael. So, in that element, it's going to be devoid of God when you're outside of Eretz Yisrael. The element of influenced by your immediate environment, physically, by your geography, by the region you're in. But it doesn't mean whoever lives outside of Eretz Yisrael can't be involved in the ideas of God. I mean, it's just narrowing, zeroing everything else out except for the aspect of the influence from where you're living.
I mean, just to,
and it's saying there is a reality to that. Don't minimize that. It's trying to say, don't minimize that. Don't think there's nothing. That the main thing is when I sit down and learn. No, there is a certain benefit just in the fact that you have an influence from the fact that you're in Yerushalayim, and you feel whenever you turn, you think about the reminders of ideas of the Avos and God. That's a factor.
Or even like when you're asking about like Tel Aviv, like it's not like.
It's interesting. I was in Boston, with my family a couple of years ago, and you just feel like Shira mentioned, like she said, like, you know, you just see all of these colleges, and you just feel like this is a place of intellectual. Like you just feel like you do feel a little different. You feel like, hey, maybe I should learn a little more. I'm here, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is a certain environmental influence, and. You know, if you're living in a society that encourages people to be a certain way, you know, and generally there's nothing that's permanently associated with a land. It's usually the living people around you, but Eretz Yisrael is different. The land itself has a permanent association to a Jew, and that has a big influence.